One summer back in the 1980s, my wife and I went cat sitting in Andorra. The cat belonged to a distant relative of my wife's, and we jumped at the chance of spending a summer in this beautiful mountainous little principality perched on top of the Pyrenees, squeezed in between France and Spain. Even in this strange environment, with apartment blocks built on the edge of plunging precipices, it stood out. Its owner was a former Rhodesian Air Force pilot, descendant of one of Europe's oldest banking dynasties, and like everyone else, was living in this weird principality because of its status as a tax-free haven. His bunker had been specially built to house not just the cat and him, but his collection of vintage sports cars. Andorra's expat population had its fair share of eccentrics. One day, as we trekked over a high mountain pass, we came across an amazing sight. A perfectly normal English bungalow surrounded by a lawn and shrubbery, complete with garden gnomes and a pond. A jolly red-faced man waved at us as he pushed his lawnmower across his flat square of grass surrounded by the barren, rocky plateau. But the strangest person we would meet was a man called Ivan Manfredo. He was a benign, middle-aged German hippie with a neat grey ponytail flopping over his unvarying uniform of dungarees and singlet, usually in bright pastel colours. He lived with a young hairdresser from Hamburg called Elke. She had a spiky blonde punk hairstyle, and wearing only her leopard skin bikini, would climb out of the window of Ivan's top floor apartment and swing monkey-like over a 1,000-foot drop up onto the roof to sunbathe. She was such a terrifying driver that none of us would get into her Jeep in the evenings when we headed off to pogo to vintage punk in nightclubs in distant, barely accessible valleys. She would speed around bends on single-lane roads clinging to the side of the mountain, where the only thing between you and the sheer drop was the little cross commemorating the last driver who had gone over. We preferred to follow at a more stately pace in one of the cars from the bunker. Ivan was a dealer in precious stones. One night, he took us down to his walk-in safe in the basement. There were little plastic pots of gems everywhere, and as I sank my hands into cool pools of sapphires and turquoise, I asked how he got into the trade. "It was chance, really," he said. "I had the contacts in South America and the Far East. At one time, I was the only one allowed into Burma, so I started to bring out rubies." I'd seen too many bad Hollywood movies about post-war Nazi networks, so I did a quick calculation. But by my reckoning, Ivan was too young to have even been in the Hitler Youth. "What kind of contacts?" I asked. "Oh, old boys from my school. Most of them live in different places all over the world now, but we keep in touch." Despite the hippie mannerisms, he had that unsleeping watchfulness you often find in people who have been in the military or in prison. And alcohol exaggerated it. Late at night, as we sat in his apartment drinking Spanish red wine, he talked, and it seemed as if his back grew straighter, his head larger. One night, he suddenly told me how his friend had tried to kill him recently. His friend was an arms dealer based in Bangkok, where he lived in a dilapidated villa surrounded by an overgrown jungle-like garden. After some heavy drinking, they played a game with bayonets. They had to track each other through the undergrowth and try to stab their opponent. Ivan lost. His friend pounced on him from behind, and at frustration at not being able to sink his blade in Ivan's back, had battered him with the hilt of the bayonet. "He was always a killer," said Ivan. "When we were in school, he killed one of our classmates." "Why?" I asked. "I don't remember why. I suppose it was the kind of thing expected of us." Then he told me about the school. It had been a special school in Prussia for the children of high-ranking army officers. "Quatsch," said Elke. "Nonsense." She was busy painting her toenails bright pink. "War, war, yakety yak." Ivan ignored her, stood up and left the room, returning with a photograph which he laid before us. I got a shock when I saw it. The child with the shaven blonde head in the photo was recognisably him, all right, though instead of dungarees, he was wearing a little black uniform. In February 1945, the Red Army was approaching Königsberg. They sent us out to fight the Russian tanks. He sighed and sipped his red wine. After that, he said, it all gets a bit hazy.